begin to learn Vayikra, begin to read Vayikra, so there is a special component here that makes the laning experience and the Shnayim Mikra experience, the Talmud Torah experience, take on a different kind of dimension to it. In some ways, it overlaps with the dimension of the past few weeks when we were reading about the construction of the Mishkan, but it's also a concept that is unique to the Karbanos. The Karbanos, as we know, we generally don't practice today. We spoke about that a little bit yesterday, about the question of should Korban Pesach be an exception to that, but at the moment it isn't, and at the moment we don't practice any of the Karbanos. So that being the case, there is an extra dimension, and maybe more than one extra dimension, to learning these parashiyos, to hearing them read in shul, to studying them on our own. Now, on the one hand, in the absence of the karbanos, so we have the notion of the neshama parim svaseinu, that the more we learn about them, that ta'osik tarasola, kiilu hikrivola, etc., etc., that we have to try to recreate the experience of the karbanos through learning about them rather than bringing them. I think we touched upon this a little bit yesterday in that different context, that there is a discussion whether this is a concept that is relevant to the entire Torah, that any time somebody finds himself in a position where he can't fulfill a mitzvah, so we recommend learning about it instead of in the absence of the ability to do it. So if you're on a desert island and you don't have a shofar, so maybe you should, luckily you have a Shulchan Aruch on the desert island, so you'll learn Hilchos Shofar instead. The Rivus Ephraim Greenblatt has a tshuva where he comes off the assumption that there is an inyan for everyone to fulfill the Tayyar Mitzvos. So he says, if that's true, I'm not sure why we know that's necessarily the case, but if that's true, so how is it possible? There is no one individual, certainly Bisman Hazeh, who is subject to all 613 Mitzvos. They don't all apply to any one person. So how is anyone supposed to fulfill all the Tayyar Mitzvos? So he asserts there that by studying about them, by learning about them, even the mitzvos that are not relevant to you, you are able to have a chelik in them. So there are those who understood that this was a concept by Kol Torah Kula, but others, such as the Chafetz Chaim and his Hakdama to Sefer Likutei Halachos. If you're familiar with Likutei Halachos, Likutei Halachos is essentially his Mishneh Berurah on Kachim. That he believed in the Harei Bana HaMikdash, that he was a Kohen who's going to have to go to work very soon, and somebody has to paskin up all the issues in Kachim. There was no Rif, there was no Halacha L'maisa. We don't have most of the Tshuva literature that would have been relevant. So he essentially went through Kachim and paskined it up, and he writes in his Akdama that this whole idea that learning Kachim in a serious way has an element to it which is perhaps unique to Kachim, that it's there, Davka, that we find this idea that by learning these issues, it's as if we are actually fulfilling it. And presumably the notion is that through the limud of Kachim, we are looking to bring ourselves closer, that the idea of a korban is a way of coming closer to God in a fashion that's different than other mitzvos. And Talmud Torah is also meant to accomplish that. So if we don't have the tool of the Korban itself, at least we study the Korban. And that is somewhat of a hechikimsa to get to the same goal. There's a little bit of a riot to this just by looking at the Talmud Bavli, by the way. So if you look at the Talmud Bavli, so we know that we don't have any Gemara in Zerah. And the Yerushalmi has Gemara in Zerah. Because the Yerushalmi was written in Eretz Yisrael, they were dealing with the Zerahim issues. The Talmud Bavli, who was in Chutz La'aretz, didn't have to deal with all those issues in Zeraim, so they didn't spend a lot of time on it. They don't have a Gemara Bavli on Zeraim, and you don't have a Bavli on Taurus either. It was also not relevant at the time the Bavli was being developed. So then the question is, we shouldn't have a Bavli on Kachim either. And the fact is, we have a very extensive Bavli on Kachim, and we actually don't have a Bavli, we don't have actually have Yerushalmi on Kachim. That was the whole separate story. So if the Bavli didn't pay attention to the topics that were not practiced at that time, as Ezra and Taras, so why is the exception made for Kachim? So it kind of seems to emphasize this idea that Kachim has this unique component to it, that there is something to its limud then when we can't fulfill its concepts, so we try to be involved in its study and try to accomplish the goals by learning about these ideas. And one could really ask that if that's the whole point, that Limud HaTorah brings you closer to God, just like the Karbanos do, then you could argue, let me learn anything. So I don't have to learn necessarily about the Karbanos. I could be learning about something else. And that will accomplish the same goal. So you have to sharpen the idea a little bit. And you see here that it's specifically, there are themes within Kodshim that ideally we would be practicing them and they would have an impact on us. And Bezman Hazeh, we can't practice them, but we can still have the themes impact on us by learning about them and by trying to understand them. And so it's on that level that these parashiyos have an additional aspect to them in terms of Talmud Torah. Ironically, because we don't put them in practice, there are other parts of the Torah that we do put into practice, so we end up focusing on that, largely, on what we have to do, knowing what the details are. And when it comes to Kodshim, so we end up, hopefully, perhaps, maybe this is the idea, that we're not able to put into practice in this door yet, but we are able to try to understand what the themes are, and maybe all the more so we should work on trying to understand what the imagery is, what the symbolism is. And of course, this is a long-standing debate among the Rishonim, among the Achronim, various statements in Chazal, what exactly the imagery is. So without going into it in tremendous detail, you know that there is a debate between the Rambam and the Ramban, that the Rambam seems to see the Karbanos as something more of a reaction to the outside world, that the other religions venerated these same animals that we're bringing as Karbanos. It was kind of a refutation of Avodah Zarah, of idolatry, which the Ramban disagreed with. It kind of gives you the impression that the Karbanos don't have inherent significance, that if the nations of the world were doing other things, then maybe we wouldn't have Vayikra the way it is. So the Ramban took a whole different tack to it, and a lot of considerations to factor in. But one of the themes he mentions is that particularly when we talk about Kodshim and we talk about the Karbanos as a kapara, the idea is that we are envisioning ourselves as if we're on the Mizbeach. So when we come and we shecht an animal and we bring this Karban, so we see it as if we ourselves are the ones being sacrificed, and that jolts us in to a different type of mentality as part of the process of tshuva. As part of the process of change, if we think that could be us over there, and this is a real-world symbolism of what really could be happening to us, has a powerful impact on our psyche. So with that introduction, as we look in Shani, so Shani essentially has two themes. And we'll just talk generally about the two themes, but they are related to each other. There's two different parshios, so to speak, in the second Aliyah, but they have an overlapping idea. Now, we read about the korban of a bird, a korban oaf, and we read also about the mincha, about a flower offering. And what they have in common on the surface is that both of them are korbanos that are brought by people who are less well off, people who are not rich enough to bring an animal, which is more expensive. In general, a behema, small behemoth even, is going to be beyond the reach of some people. So they have other options. It's possible to bring other types of korbanos, and both of those are discussed in this aliyah. They both have that element to them, that the oaf and the mincha are korbanos that are brought by people who are not in a position to afford korban behemoth. So you find the constant references to that type of theme. The first pasuk and the second aliyah begins V'im min ha'of olo karbono la'Hashem hikrif min ha'atarim omin b'nei hayona es karbono. So you have the word karbono twice, as Yoznayim LaTorah emphasizes. You know, it's a way of showing how important this karbon is, despite the fact that in a monetary sense it's not on the same level as the karbonos that we read about in the first Aliyah. And the Al-Sheikh notes over here that a person who brings such a karbon, in addition to sacrificing whatever he's sacrificing, so he feels very depressed. He feels that there's something lacking. He has somewhat of a brokenheartedness as he's bringing this korban, and he's not sure if Hashem's going to accept it. So therefore, the Torah kind of emphasizes that, oh yes, this is for sure accepted. This is where we say, karbono la Hashem. This is very dear to God. But as Al-Sheikh also adds on, that not only that, not only is the carbon accepted, but this attitude that he has of feeling insecure and feeling brokenheartedness, this also becomes a part of the karban. This also becomes a part of the offering to a Kaddish Baruch Hu and a part of the kapara process, which is all bound in together. So this word karbano, having all of those significances, the Yazayim L'Toru also notes that it's individualized by saying karbano, that specifically the ani is the one who brings such a karban. If an usher was to try to bring such a karban, and he could really afford more, it wouldn't have the same impact. It's very personalized to the fact that this is for somebody who is giving this offering because that's what he can afford. And there is a lot of symbolism contained in what we're talking about. So the pasuk here says that he should bring v'hikriv min ha-torim o min b'nei hayona es karbano. So he should bring either turtle doves, torim, or b'nei hayona, young doves, doves b'nei hayona. So the Ramban has a discussion about why there is that difference, B'nei Hayona versus Torim. So it sounds like you bring adult turtle doves or small Yonas. So why is that? So the Ramban explains in the fascinating analysis of bird personalities that the Torah wants us to connect to the various midos of the birds, and that the Torim are very faithful to each other. And if one of them dies, if the couple, if the married Torim dies, one of them dies, so the other one never remarries, doesn't recouple with any other Torah. And the imagery is that we are committed to a Kadosh Baruch Hu in an absolute sense, and we're not going to trade him for anybody else. We're not interested in running away from a Kadosh Baruch Hu. And the B'nai HaYona, the reason we want to bring a young Yona, and the Nitziv actually emphasizes that this B'nai HaYona is not only a concern that when you're makish it, it should be a young Yonah, but when you bring it also, and maybe that's also why the Torah emphasizes korbano, it should be the same category as it was when it was dedicated, because the B'nai HaYonah have a different component to them, that the adult Yonahs, they're very jealous of each other. And because they're jealous, they end up, ironically, leaving the other and switching for another mate, which Yaakov Kamenetsky emphasizes. You see how the irrationality of this mid of jealousy, because you're so jealous of their spouse, you end up leaving the spouse and going to another, doing exactly what you think the spouse is doing to you. So we're not so impressed with the midah of the adult Yonah. But the child Yonah is a animal that brings a greater sense of ava into the nest, and the parents are more protective of it, and it has a greater connection to its original source. So we like that imagery also. We want to say that we are remain connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We use both the adult Torim and the young Yonah in order to make that point. And that's why the Torah is makbid, that we should have that age representation bedavka. But it's interesting, the Balei Turim points out later on that in the korban of a Yoledes, where she brings one bird, so it's either a Yona or a Tor. And the din is that preferably it's a Yona, but if she could find a Yona, she shouldn't bring a Tor. So here, we just kind of put Torim on a higher level than the Yona, but when it comes to a Karban Yoledes, we would prefer that it be a Yona. And the Balei Turim explains that it's the same issue, that since the Torim are not going to, so to speak, remarry after one spouse is taken away, so since you're only going to bring one bird here, so if you're going to take one of a couple, so that other couple is going to live a lonely, widowed existence. So we don't want to impose that on this animal. We want to have a sensitivity to the animal that it shouldn't go through that. So therefore, when it comes to that korban, where we only bring one, we have a preference that it should be Davka Leona and not the Torah, for this very same midah that the Ramban emphasizes here in a different direction. So then the Pasuk tells us about how the bird is brought. The next Pasuk goes on to say, V'hikrivo ha-kohen ha-mizbeach, u'malak es rosho v'hiktir ha-mizbeacha, v'nimso damo al-kir ha-mizbeach. So you bring the bird, and you snap its neck, essentially, with the Kohen snaps his neck with his fingernail. And that itself is a very unusual type of process. And it seems to be that it roughly corresponds to Shechita, the same way we have a Shechita by a Korban, so we have Malika by a bird, except there are differences that the malika has to be done at the mizbeach itself, and as the Torah Tamim explains, that the blood of the bird is going to be placed on the mizbeach, so there's not so much of it, it's a small bird. So if you're going to do that somewhere else, and you're going to collect the blood with a kli, and then some of the blood's going to stick to the kli, you're not going to have so much. So therefore, this has to be done at the mizbeach itself, and therefore it has to be done by a kohen. Shchita, by korbanos, shchita can be done by a zar, it doesn't have to be a kohen. But here, you have to do the malika at the mizbeach, so it has to be a kohen doing it. But what's pshat on malika? It's really an unusual kind of process. And especially if we think that shchita represents to us a humane way of slaughter, that we shech the animal because we feel that it's the most painless way to do things, and we have tzar bali chayim considerations, and many other halachas represent the tzar bali chayim considerations. So how come malika, we don't know exactly what they experience, but certainly from an appearance perspective, it doesn't seem to be as smooth as shchita. So what's the idea there? And Reb Zalman Sirotskin, in his Znaim LaTorah, he has a fascinating point where he suggests that it has to do with the different karbonos that we're dealing with. That if we look at the Ramban's point that we mentioned before, that a portion of the kapara is that the person bringing the karbon should view it as if this is happening to him. So what is the usher concerned about? The usher, who's basically happy with his life, so he just doesn't want to die. He doesn't really care how he dies. He doesn't want to die in any way. He wants to keep on doing what he's doing. So the idea of an animal being shechted, even if it's being shechted painlessly and humanely, is still going to scare him, because he wouldn't want to be shechted that way either. So therefore, that has the impact that we're trying to elicit in that context. But when it comes to the korban of an ani, so the ani has a very different mentality towards life. He's not so happy with his life. And he may even, on some level, envy the animal that's being shechted. He may feel like life's not worth living. And all he cares about is, he doesn't care so much about dying, but he doesn't want to die painfully. He wants to die painlessly. And perhaps the idea here is to make him realize that there are things worse than dying. Better he should live than say, I want to die as long as it's a painless death. So the death of the animal that's in his place here is not such a smooth death, at least from a visual perspective, perhaps in order to push in a different direction, not to have the attitude that, well, I'm unhappy anyway, so who cares? No, that's not what we want you to think. We want you to recognize that you should keep on living, and that you should work to make things better, and to not have yourself in the position that this animal is in. It's a very fascinating idea that the Aznayim LaTorah suggests. And we'll just also mention in this context, so then the pasuk ends off talking about the heisir es muraso benotsoso. So what exactly does that mean? You remove something from the animal. So machlokas says, and Tzib points out, it's machlokas, Rashi, and the Ramban, what exactly is being removed here? What exactly is going on? The Gemara Nesach Ezvachim and Daf Samachay talks about it. Seems like essentially it has to do with removing the stomach of the animal. And Rabbeinu Bachaya explains that the bird flies around and eats from gezel, as opposed to an animal that was owned by someone who hopefully fed it properly, so he doesn't have to eat from gezel. But the bird eats from gezel, and therefore we don't want the gezel to be a part of the korban. We don't want that to be a part of what's being brought here. So that also has an important message associated with it, that Kadosh Baruch Hu is only gezel ba'ola, doesn't want any type of theft being mixed in with the korban, doesn't want that to be a part of the sacrificial process. So even after the fact, and this food that's been already consumed by the bird, we don't want it to have any part of what's going on. So now we'll just talk briefly about what we find in the second part of the Aliyah, which begins with Perek Beis, the beginning of Perek Beis, which shifts to another topic, but as we said, it's a very related topic. It's another korban of an ani. Maybe it's the ikur korban of an ani, which we'll talk about in a moment. Korban mincha. So the pasuk begins, v'nefesh ki sakir korban mincha l'Hashem, solus ye korbano, v'yatzak alei Hashem v'nasan alei levona. So the pasuk begins by saying, v'nefesh ki sakir korban, that when a person, when a nefesh brings the korban, So what's the emphasis on a nefesh over there? Why? What's the Torah trying to tell us? So the Gemara Maseches Menachos on Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Beis has two drashos on that pasuk. One that it's nefesh, meaning a singular, meaning that this is not a korban that is brought b'shutfus. You can't have two people together bringing this korban. And also, once again, focusing on the idea that this is the korban of an ani. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu was saying that I recognize that this is ki'ilu, he's giving himself on the mizbeach. It's as if he's being makriv his own nefesh, his own neshama. So it seems like it's two different drushes. Tosfos raises that question. Why does the Gemara have two different drushes on the same pasuk? And it's also striking, as Bezalel Vidinsky discusses in the Sefer Mishkan Bezalel, that it's not really true that there's no partnership that's ever involved in a mincha. So it sounds like the drasha is trying to tell you can't have a shutfus because you can only have one person and one nefesh. But we have korbanos tzibur, that are mincha, we have the shtei alechem, we have the korban haomer that's coming up, we have korbanos that are brought by the tzibur, that are multiple people connected to a mincha. So how do you understand that? So he suggests that what the Torah is telling us here by saying it's a nefesh, that it's the soul of the ani, that there is a distinction between what a rich person brings and what a poor person brings, that a rich person is essentially bringing mamonis, he's essentially bringing something of monetary value. So there is somewhat of a focus on the item itself that he is bringing. The poor person is not able to afford so much, so what he's bringing is actually his own commitment, his own devotion. And we look at it that way. So it's more of a focus on the gavra rather than on the chefza, so to speak. That a rich person is bringing an impressive chefza, so we could perhaps talk about how to look at that chefza. And maybe that chefza could be brought by a group of people, could be brought by a partnership, by a shutfus. But the mincha is brought as expression of one's own devotion, so it doesn't make sense to have that done in a partnership, to have that done in a shutfus. It's really the same drasha, the idea that it represents his neshama, his soul, is why we wouldn't allow it to be brought by a group of people together. However, a korban tzibur is different than a korban shutfus. So a shutfus, they both have many people together, but shutfus means a couple people come together and create some type of a joint partnership. While a tzibur means it is the united entity of Klal Yisrael. They're made up of many people, but they create one entity. So the mincha that comes from Klal Yisrael is an expression of the singularity of the whole tzibur. And then he goes on to note that the Gemara, as we mentioned, so the Gemara emphasizes the idea of Talmud Torah as a method to evoke the theme of the korbanos. But the Gemara has an additional drasha from the pasuk in Malachi, which says that a mincha specifically, a Talmud Chacham who's Oseik b'Torah, is comparable to a mincha. So perhaps the idea is, as he suggests, that we're focusing on the Mesiras Nefesh and learning, not just on the content of learning itself, but somebody who devotes his nights and his days to learning Torah is somebody who is giving of himself, who's giving his very neshama, and therefore the comparison is not just to a korban in general, but specifically to a mincha. Jonathan?
So or everyone's sefer title comes from mincha's name?
Maybe, you know, those who use mincha specifically as...
It is
somewhat common. Maybe they're inspired, but they have to go through all the hakdamas to see if it matches up. But in the Sefer Imre Baruch, which maybe could be titled the Minchas Baruch, so he has a little bit of a discussion about this character as well, and he notes a few other interpretations. He notes that the Netziv understands the purpose of a Mincha is there to deal with Midos. That the idea of Nefesh is the panemius of a person, is what's inside, and that this is a way of focusing inward, and not just on outward kind of avarice that have an expression in the external context, but that one should work on his character traits, one should work on his specific midos, and look inside, and that the various types of menachos, and Siv gets into a little bit of some ancient theory of how personality traits are developed, so you could take a look if you want to see the detail. But his basic thrust, his basic point is that the panemios of a person is what is addressed by this mincha. It kind of correlates a little bit to a similar kind of idea, that this is different than the carpet of an animal where you're giving something external. This is essentially, you're giving something internal. The Chasam Sofer in his Torah Moshe has an interesting point which maybe we could get a little bit of synergy out of. I have to kind of impose the meaning on what he's writing, but it might be a little bit synergistic for us. That the Chasam Sofer asks, why is it that the Chazal say about the Mincha, this is the korban, this is the derech of an ani to bring a Mincha. So as we mentioned, the Aliyah has two different lower level economically korbanos. So why a mincha more than the korban of? The truth is a mincha could theoretically be much more expensive than a korban of. A korban of, a small bird, might be very inexpensive, but flour is not so cheap. Flour can be expensive. So why are we assuming that an ani is more likely to bring a mincha rather than an of? And the Chasam Sofer has a fascinating point, which I'm going to twist a little bit to appropriate for some synergy. But he notes that, yes, the bird, if you sell them both in the store, the bird and the flower, so the bird might be cheaper. Maybe it just costs a few cents. But the person, this ani, doesn't necessarily have any pennies at all. He doesn't necessarily have enough money to buy even the very expensive, very inexpensive bird. Maybe he doesn't have anything. But the materials to make flour, that he could do. Because he has laket, he has shikha, he has peya, he has access to all kinds of agricultural produce that's his by dint of the Torah's rules for aniyim. So he could take that and he could make that into flour and he could bring a mincha that way, even though the mincha, if you sell it in the store, would end up being more expensive than the oaf, but nonetheless, this is something that might be more accessible to the ani. So in that sense, he says that notion of nefesh, he's giving of himself. So what he means, I think, is that he's going to have to give up eating for that day, because the purpose of leket, shikha, pei, etc., is to give him what to eat. So instead of using this to eat, he's going to have to give it as a korban. So that's essentially like we find by a tainis. We have the notion, mizmanazeh, that we say that a tainis should be accepted as a korban, because when a person doesn't eat on a tainis, so he whatever part of his body is reduced by that experience, so that should be kiilu hikriv al gabi hamizbeah. And we have this idea that whatever money you save by not eating should go to tzedakah on a tainis. So that notion, maybe here you find it as well, that the ani is not going to be able to eat that day or eat as much, because whatever he could have had to take for his own nutrition, he'll have to redirect towards the Karban Mincha. But we could perhaps say it a little bit differently in line with what we've been learning recently to give it a synergistic spin, that if he's going to buy a bird, so fine, that will be somewhat external. But if he's going to make a mincha based on these materials that he's going to have to collect himself, so that's his own personal labor that's going into it. And a very major recurring theme in the sugyas we've been doing in Poland is that the value of a person's own personal labor is qualitatively different than the value of anything else. And we saw that if you tie up a worker, so to speak, figuratively or literally, you prevent him from working, that that's a more direct hezek than taking away his car or his laptop or anything that he could have used to profit. That's a grama, but if you actually prevent the worker from using his hours, that's something much more personal. And we find, and we'll discuss more about this throughout the semester, about how there are halachas about a poel who works by the hour that require a very specific type of treatment because of the recognition that the person using his hours of labor is a more personal contribution than what we find by anything else. So perhaps you could argue, building on the Chasam Sofer, that that's the idea here as well, that even if monetarily this could be assessed at a greater value than the Karban Ouf, but it represents him actually transferring his personal labor into the process, and therefore it's just in terms of collecting. You know, so that's perhaps what we mean when we say that it has the symbolism of nefesh. And we'll just end off by noting, Rabbi Simon also quotes in his Sefer from the Be'er Moshe, the Ajva Rebbe, but quoted from the Baal HaTanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe, that also when we talk about nefesh, when we talk about mesiris nefesh, that sometimes we think that mesiris nefesh means that the person literally is mosir nefesh, a person allows his soul to be martyred on behalf of the Torah. But that's not the only way to see it. We don't have to be so extreme that any time a person is able to push off his own desires, his own instincts, and his own wishes on behalf of the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's also a Mesiras Nefesh. That's taking your own very personal sensitivities and your very own personal inclinations and saying, I'm not going to follow that right now. I'm going to dedicate this to a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So that's in the spirit of the Gemara and Bava Kama, Mali Katla Kula, Mali Katla Palga, that what's the difference when you talk about killing an animal or wounding it? You know, what's the difference between killing it all the way, killing it a little bit? So too, we talk about Mesiras Nefesh. So you don't have to literally lay down your life. That if you push aside your personal desires and your personal needs, and you prioritize the Kadosh Baruch Hu, so that itself is a type of Mesiras Nefesh. So it could be, this is again, as kind of a running theme in Karbanos as a whole, and that this Aliyah particularly has this unified theme of the two types of Karbanos that are brought by an Ani, and how in some ways they are more powerful Karbanos than that which is brought by an Ashir, and that there is this overall notion that a Kadosh Baruch Hu values these Karbanos in a different way, and that they represent a very personal type of experience. So as we hear the lightning, the Shabbos, again, we don't have the opportunity to actually bring a Korban Mincha, but we do have the ability to focus on these themes. And he also notes there, Rabbi Simon, the suggestion that the Meshech Chachma has in Parashas Bo, that the Pasuk in Malachi that we know from Shemoneh Esrei, when we say, V'arva l'Hashem Minchas Yehuda v'Yerushalayim, that ultimately God will find sweetness in the mincha of Yehuda and Yerushalayim, and the question of why it emphasized the mincha as opposed to the other korbanos. They say in the name of Rav Kook, that Rav Kook allegedly believed that we weren't going to have animal sacrifices in the future, and that we weren't going to eat animals at all. Allegedly that he was supposedly a vegetarian, b'chayiv, and that he believed that that was the more perfected way to live. And that Lasavava, when we have a base of Mikdash again, it's only gonna bring Menachos, we're not gonna have animal Karbanos, and that's why the Pasuk and what we incorporate into our tefillah, we say Minchas Yehuda Yerushalayim, that that should be pleasing to God. So whether or not you accept that thesis and all of its implications for all the restaurants, a comment on that?
Lasavava, will you be able to eat meat?
Sorry?
Is it going to be accepted for people to eat meat?
I think his implication was not.
No?
I don't know how verified this is. I don't know if he wrote this directly or this is said in his name. And I think there is some controversy about whether or not it's true that he was a vegetarian personally. But the claim is that he believed that ultimately it's not really right for people to eat animals and that we shouldn't...
In the Midbar, they got a really hard time for trying to...
For wanting.
Yeah,
so... Yeah, you could support it one way or another, and before the Mabul there wasn't So there is a history to it, it's a complicated history, but that's what they say in his name, that he believes that humanity ultimately should not eat animals, and that therefore the Beis HaMikdash also is not going to be a place where animals will be shechted, and that Minchas Yerushalayim will be the notion. I don't know, I think Michael has to hand up.
I heard the name of Yehuda, that his father ate as a vegetarian who
would
eat an
ultra. That could be. Yeah, like I guess there are various reports, including from within the family, what exactly his attitude was. I don't know how verified all this is, but that's what the claim is, that he believed that ultimately we would not be engaged in eating meat or sacrificing animals, and that that's the intent of this pasuk focusing on the mincha. Jonathan?
Well, in regards to the pre-mubble, wasn't it Havel that brought a korbanol, I think, and then only... So
it's
to
me. Also in terms of eating, but in terms of eating versus...
Right, but we weren't... The base of Mikdash is not going to be meat.
So you're saying if you want to draw the parallel between... Okay, an interesting point. But in any event, whether or not that's true, so what the Meshech Chachma essentially wanted to assert is that the reason that Mincha is focused on in this Pasuk is not because Mincha is the only kind of korban that will be then, maybe yes, maybe no, who knows, but that there is a specific attraction to this Mincha. The Mincha really represents a type of sacrifice that a rich person is really not capable of. You know, that essentially it creates such a different kind of personality that as much as the Ani envies the Usher, the fact is the Ani is capable of giving himself in a way that the Usher is simply not on the scale where it becomes relevant. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu has particular love for this, and therefore what's going to be that harbinger of a new Geula is the smell of the mincha, so to speak, is what's really going to do it. Even if there are other kabbalists, it's really the mincha that's really going to establish this theme that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a particular affection for. Okay, speaking of mincha, and that's a perfect segue, so we will...